Welcome to Dish the Dirt, a light-hearted and fun podcast about Australian flower growers, their stories, knowledge and insights into the industry. I'm your host Rebecca, and each week I speak to a different farmer and get them to dish the dirt. Dish the Dirt acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land on which we work and live, and recognise their continuing connection to land, water and community. We pay respect to elders past, present and emerging. Hello and welcome to episode 4 of season 6 of Dish the Dirt. It is wonderful to have you along this week and to be sharing another flower farming story with you. This week I speak to Jane from Big Sky Flower Farm, which is located in an up-and-coming area in the Adelaide Hills, amongst vineyards, strawberry farms, orchards and farming land. Owner Jane lives on the 10-acre property with her husband, 2.5-year-old and 5-month-old sons, as well as a couple of horses, goats, dogs, cats, chickens and ducks. Jane started the farm after 2 life-changing events occurred. 80% of their property was burnt in the 2019 Cuddle Creek bushfire, and then shortly after, her 14-year career in the travel industry came crashing down due to COVID, all within a few months of having their first baby. Jane and her family were lucky enough that their house was not damaged in the fire. It was saved by the country fire service. With most of their property blackened and with being in lockdown, Jane decided to use this time to repair her garden, but didn't have a lot of money to do so, so she learnt about growing from seed and propagating her own plants. From here, she has become obsessed, and shortly after, this obsession sparked a new career. Jane, it was so wonderful to speak to you, and I found your story very inspiring. It was a bit hard to ask those 3 questions at the end. What would you take if you had to leave quickly? Because I feel that this has just been such a recent event for you. I really appreciate your time, and I'm sure that a lot of people are going to get a lot of advice and useful information out of this episode. So let's get into it. So yeah. Do you want to start off by telling us where you're situated?
Okay. Yeah, we are in the Adelaide Hills, so we're not far out of Adelaide. We're about 35 minutes out of Adelaide. We are in a bit of an up-and-coming area. We're not far from a lot of the wineries around here, a lot of the really well-known South Australian wineries. Mostly surrounded by like cattle and sheep farms, and we're in a cool spot actually. There's lots of things happening up here, like gin distilleries are opening and strawberry farms that have a restaurant, and
cool spot. Sounds fun. Great. And have you been there long?
We would have been here this July will be 5 years.
Okay.
So not too long in the scheme of it, but
yeah. And tell me, how big is your property that you're on?
We've got just under 10 acres.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
And how did you get into flower farming? There's a bit of a story to this, so
yeah, it's a bit of an unusual one. Well, to start with, both my parents were very interested in gardening. So I grew up around a lot of flowers, and then we were burnt in the 2019 Cuddly Creek bushfire, which was pretty crazy up here.
Yeah.
And I had just had my first baby, just had Harry, and I had a few issues after the having him. I still had placenta in me.
Oh, lack God. Of better words.
I know, but they didn't realize until about 2 months after. I had to have just a small little surgery to get rid of it, and so then the next day I was on the couch recovering, and I woke up and I had 38 missed calls, and I was like, that's not ideal. And it was my mum and my husband saying, "Yeah, there's a bushfire not far away." And I was like, "Oh, okay." And they said it was in Lobethal, which is a little bit of a drive away from us, where a lot of the really cool wineries are. And I was like, "Oh, nah, that'll be fine. That'll be fine." And my husband's a police officer, and he was working at the fire that day, and he's like, "Nah, you should be fine. The wind's not going that way." And then a little while later, I then got a panic phone call from him saying, "Yeah, the wind is going that way. You need to go." So I packed up, what things I had ready, the child, cats, the dogs, and I remember I turned a sprinkler on and let the chickens and ducks out of their pen because obviously I couldn't take them. And I turned a sprinkler on and I opened up the gates for, we have two pet goats, two rescue horses that don't float, and two miniature Hereford cows. And I just had to open up the gates, and it was really scary. But
So scary.
we were really lucky that all our animals survived. Even it was crazy. I've got this crazy photo of where I had the sprinkler on for the ducks and chickens. Everywhere that the sprinkler wasn't was black, and all of them must have just huddled under the sprinkler. It's just horrible to even think of. So they all survived, including some 2-day-old ducklings, and they were fine. And when we came back home and saw the paddock, there was like an area in the paddock that had like a pink or orange dust on the ground, and that was from the bomber, the airplanes dumping on the paddock. So they saved a spot in our paddock, and our horses and goats and cows just must have been in the right spot. And yeah, that was very lucky because both our neighbors lost their horses, so that was horrific. But
Gosh.
then, yeah, so then not long after that, COVID hit, and I have a 14-year career in the travel industry, which that came to a screeching halt. And I was still on maternity leave at that point. And the way that the travel industry used to work, I think it's quite different now, is we got paid when clients would pay their trip in full. So I'd, had it all organized, because I'd been in the industry for a long time, that I had a lot of people paying their holidays when I was on maternity leave, so that because we didn't have proper maternity leave, and so that was paying for me to take 12 months off. And then obviously they all cancelled, so all of my pay suddenly disappeared. And then not only that, I had to pay money back to people that had already paid. I've never worked so many hours and so hard to pay people back and not make any money.
Yep,
So,
so hard.
yeah, so that was pretty crazy. And I think just the combination of our property being so burnt, so about 80% of our property was burnt, but our house was saved by the amazing CFS. But we had a lot of damage to the house from, we assume from them saving the house. There was a lot of water damage, so we had to replace our ceilings and floors and electrics and all that jazz. But the main thing was the actual property itself. And we lost sheds and all that and fences. But all of a sudden, I found myself with all this time at home, obviously in lockdown, with not really a career, and on maternity leave. And so I remember I got some compost delivered, and I was like, "All right, let's start cleaning this up, shall we?" So I just started doing that. And there's this amazing woman, Sue, who lives not too far away from me. She led a volunteer group who were propagating plants for bushfire affected families. And we were donated some plants, and then not long after, she ran a little free workshop for people affected by the fire, and that was on how to propagate our own plants. And I was so interested in it, and I really enjoyed it and found it satisfying. So I did a lot of that over that time. And we already have a polytunnel, just a little polytunnel, on the property, and it was burnt in the fire, because the people that lived there before us kept firewood in it. They didn't, I know. So that split open in the fire, but annoyingly enough, it didn't burn the firewood. So we actually sold the firewood to just get it out, and then I set it up to then start growing my own seeds, and
Wonderful.
it was really cool. And we made some new garden beds, and I remember I just cut some flowers one day, and I gave it to my GP actually. And then she was like, "Wow, these are amazing. You know, you could do this for a living." And I was like, "Huh, okay, maybe I could do that." And so then it wasn't, I didn't sort of start seriously doing things until probably January last year. And I started just prepping a lot more beds, and then I started buying perennials like roses and all that jazz. And yeah, the obsession sort of started from there. And then we were lucky enough to be eligible for some grants from the bushfire, and I used that money to start up this business and build up my stock. And but shortly after I started doing this seriously, I found out I was pregnant again, and I was like, wicked. I had just started a Facebook page, and sort of like, just to start a bit of a following. Not that I'm great with social media. And then I was like, oh, good. I just told everyone I was going to have a massive season next season, and now I'm pregnant and due in December. So that wasn't ideal, but it was, yeah, we
You
prepped all the
managed it.
beds. Yeah, I was digging my new beds for my dahlias. I had 2 45-meter lengths, like rows, for my dahlias. And then I had another one for just some annuals to trial. And I did probably about two-thirds of that myself, and then I had to get my husband to help me because I was about 34 weeks pregnant, and I don't have machinery, so I did it all by hand when I was like massive. So yeah, that was fun. And then yeah, I was just sort of using this season just gone as a bit of a trial to just see what I wanted to grow, what I wanted to do. But yeah, I
What do
had
you
so many flowers. I thought I should sell them.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So what are you finding is working really well that you've planted, and what do you think that you'll carry on with?
Definitely ranunculus. The dahlias did really, really well, actually. And then I enjoyed like Queen Anne's lace. Straw flower did really well. Lots of cosmos and scabiosa. My roses did really well. They were only little because I just planted them August last year. But yeah, I've really fallen in love with them, which is funny because as a kid, I hated roses. My mum loves roses. She'll have just a rose garden if she could. But I think it was the thorns when I was a kid. I think, trying to run around in the garden and then you'd hit a thorn, and I just have those sorts of memories. But now I love them, so I've got another 150 roses coming in a couple of months' time, which is exciting.
Lovely.
And yeah, it's just taking off. It's exciting.
Great. So just going back to the bushfire and your property afterwards,
Yes.
did it affect the soil? Did you have to do anything when you decided to make some flower beds? Was there anything you did to the soil?
Yeah, I haven't, well, I didn't have the machinery to cultivate too much. But I joined a couple of the Australian flower farming Facebook groups, and there's a lot of talk on building your beds up instead of digging too much. Not that I'm no dig or anything, because I'm not. So I added a lot of compost, and that I had to buy in because I didn't have that available here. So yes, that. And I'm very lucky to be about maybe a 15-minute drive from Newtrog, which is a, I don't know if I'm allowed to say brand names, whoops.
No, you are. Yeah, it's fine. No.
They're a fertilizer company who
Okay.
are really well known. Like they sell at, the big shops like Bunnings and stuff like that as
Yeah,
well. But
okay. Yeah.
they have some amazing products, and I mentioned to them that what I was doing, and yeah, they came down with some products, and which is crazy because the guy that is the rep there, I actually did his travel years
Oh,
ago,
cool.
and it wasn't until he came where I was just like, I know you. So yeah, so I added a lot of their products
Yeah,
to the soil
great.
as well.
Yeah, what sort of products were they? Do you mind me
So
asking?
I did a lot of research into what dahlias require. And I found, like, because there's a lot of products like blood and bone and all that jazz, but I was trying to get, I guess, the most for my money. And I found that Rooster Booster was perfect for dahlias for the ratio of NPK. So yeah, when I was building the beds, before I put compost on top, I added gypsum because we do sort of get quite clay not too far down. And then I added some Rooster Booster and some Seamungus, which is another Nutrog product. And then I turned it over with the compost. And apparently dahlias really like that because they did really well.
Yeah, amazing. So what's your season like up there? I guess it gets cold
Yes.
up in the hills. So
Yeah.
is it a very long season? When do you sort of get your first frost?
We got our first frost only about 2.5 weeks ago. So what is it now? Probably the start of May. It's crazy. I think that's been one of my biggest challenges is trying to work out when first and last frosts are because it's so different. Like, especially when you're in a hilly area as well. I live not too far away from, do you know who Sophie Thompson is? She's from Gardening Australia. Yeah, she's really amazing.
I should know.
She's really cool, and I contacted her a couple of years ago just saying, what do you sort of work out? And she's like, it's really hard because some years your last frost can be end of September, and then randomly a couple of years ago it was like the 7th of November. So it's like, how do you work it out? But someone said to me, if you do successions around your frost date, if you do, some seeds 2 weeks before when you think your frost date is, then in line with your frost date, and then 2 weeks after, then you've got it covered. So that's what I'm trying to do. But we have really hot summers here. We get usually not the summer we've just had, but usually we have a lot of days over 40, even up to 45, 46 degrees. But
Do you
then in
find that affects the flowers? Do
well,
you shade cover them? What do you do to combat that heat?
because this season just gone was my first, I guess my first proper season. It was such a mild summer, I didn't have to do anything. But compared to when we had the bushfire, obviously, like that was just horrendous. That was so hot. So I'm not really sure yet, to be honest. But I'd say our climate is, we could be quite similar to Katie and Rob at Little Lindop. So they're about 45 minutes away from us, but like we can be quite really dry in summer, but then we tend to have wet winters.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
And what, I guess in your area, are there lots of other flower farmers? Are there people you've been able to bounce off? I guess Katie and Rob being 45 minutes away, that's not that far in,
Yeah.
the grand scheme of things. Are there other people closer to you?
So I didn't know a lot of people around, I guess, the Adelaide Hills as such. Remember when I decided to start selling dahlias, I contacted Gosha at Dahlia Hills Farm. She's maybe about 25 minutes away from me, and I just wanted to ask to get a bit of an idea of how she was pricing things, because I didn't want to step on other people's toes. I didn't want to be too cheap that I'm taking business away from other people that I could be networking with, and I didn't want to be too expensive. So it was just a coincidence that like the next day she was meeting up with a couple of other local farmers and
Yeah,
growers,
great.
and so she's like, "Would you like to come along?" And I was like, "Wow, that's amazing! I wasn't expecting that." So yeah, I went over there and met a couple of other local growers, which was really cool. But probably the way that I've connected the most is meeting a few people from one of the Australian flower farmers' Facebook pages. And I have connected with three amazing girls who have just had their first season, so started the same time as me. And we talk pretty much every day. It's amazing. Two out of the three have little kids as well, so it's been really cool to see how they're doing things, and they just have really cool social medias as well. I just think they're amazing, and that's something that I am working on. I'm not brilliant with social media, but I'm working on it, and their pages are fantastic. I don't know what I'd do without them, to be honest.
Yeah, great.
I'd be lost.
Taking it back just quickly to sort of starting out and having kids, I was having a conversation the other day with a grower that I know quite well, and she said, it's really not easy, because I wanted to, I said to her, how about you come and do this talk for me, because I wanted to do this woman inspiring woman talk. And she was like, I don't know how much inspiring I can be, because honestly, it is really hard. Do you find it really, just because I think sometimes it is quite a viable industry for women who have found themselves, having to change careers and being at home with kids. It is sort of a viable industry for them to get into, but have you found it's harder than you expected?
It's hard because a lot of the times in which you're working are daylight hours, for lack of a better explanation. And when the kids are awake, you can't really do anything. Like, I've been planting out all my ranunculus, and one of the good ways to do it, some people do it, some people don't, is you can soak your corms and your everything before, so you can either pre-sprout them or put them in the ground hydrated. And I remember I put a whole heap of them in a bucket of water, and like, you're supposed to have them in there for a couple of hours, and I just had to drop what I was doing because one of the kids woke up and I completely forgot about them, and I think I rotted about $300 worth of ranunculus.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And so it's the stopping and starting that's really tricky. But then I got into a good rhythm with the kids, because Ollie was he was still quite little, so I could take him into my studio where I do a lot of my seeds and things like that as well. And I'd have him in the pram or in a little like bassinet type thing in the studio, and then Harry would be asleep in the house. But my Harry, who has slept through the night since he was 5 months old, chose the week of Mother's Day to then get up four times a night.
Nah.
So here I am frantically trying to get everything done for Mother's Day because I sell retail bunches as well as wholesale.
Okay.
And then, yeah, Harry decided to not reliably sleep. So that was the biggest week of my life because I was exhausted.
Yeah.
So I think it's great. It is something that you can do at home when kids are asleep.
So who has inspired you the most on your journey so far?
Well, I guess going back to probably the local flower farmers that are parents that have kids at home, that like seeing what some of these women do it's just incredible. And I just adore these three girls that I chat to each day. And can I say who they are?
Yeah, of course you can. Yeah, I'd love that.
There's Tiff, who's her business is called The Cussing Cultivator.
Mm-hmm.
She's amazing, and we've been chatting for a long time. And then Tash from Little Grow Farm and Nicole from Pickle and Cole Blooms. They've just been so great to me. And everyone's got a different style. And Tiff and Nicole, they sell retail bunches, and Tash does more wholesale. So that kind of guides me a bit in both worlds, which is really good. And then, yeah, just other girls within Australia. Marty from Quiet Contrary Flower Farm has been great to me. She's such a hard worker, and I love following her on socials. And then it was funny, before having this chat, I went back and replayed a lot of the podcasts that I'd listened to. And I listened to Jen from Southern Highlands again.
Yeah.
And, oh, God, I sent her a message the other day. I said, gosh, your story is like, I'm so similar to you with the kids, with completely changing the direction of career from a bit of a soul-destroying career.
Yeah.
To something completely different. And and the other thing with her is how she went quite big quite quickly and, like, started quite big, and I very much can relate to that. I didn't sort of hold back. I'm a big believer of going hard or going home.
Yeah.
And then Lauralee from Florally, obviously she's amazing, and I love following her journey. And Emma from Blue Gum Valley Farm. She's so knowledgeable, and everyone's got their different things, whether you're following someone like Little House on the Dairy because of her, you know, amazing creative side, or you're following someone and their journey because they just know so much about the actual plants themselves. It's just, I'm more inspired by, I guess, people within Australia, if that makes sense.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of them are women, like the people that you've mentioned. They are women who have had big career changes and gone and created a viable business at home, which is pretty incredible. What do you love about your farm and your flowers? What's the biggest thing that you love?
I love that I can be at home. I've worked from home in travel for the last 5-6 years, so I am used to being at home. I'm a hard worker, but when I'm starting something new, I'm very pedantic, so I'm not the fastest at the start. And I think that's something that I couldn't, having been in my other career for 14 years, just the thought of doing something completely new, like in a different industry and not knowing what I was doing, just scared the world out of me. So I like being at home. I like making a contribution to my area, which, as I said, you know, is a bit of an up-and-coming area. I like making a contribution to making that area a bit, like, prettier as well, if that makes sense. Like, I had a complete stranger come, I remember it was when I was doing my dahlia rose when I was pregnant, and this guy just pulled into my driveway and he just came and just said, I just love what you're doing for our neighborhood. I was like, no, oh, really? Nice. Thank you.
Here's the shovel.
Yeah. If you could just do this, that'd be great. So, yeah, that was a pretty cool moment. And I just, I don't know, I love being outside now. And I don't even really care if it's, you know, raining a bit or whatever's going on. I just really enjoy being outside. And I think that came from the combination of the bushfire, but COVID and maternity leave. Like,
yeah, it's a lot.
Yeah, but how lucky are we that, like, we have that land during lockdown that we could go outside, that we could do something, because before that we were living in the burbs and we had a 600 square meter property and that would have been a completely different world for us. So, I love being around it. I love every time a new flower blooms as well, and just seeing just how cool it is. And, you know, but there's been things that I haven't liked as well. Like a lot of people have said on this podcast that they don't like cornflowers. I couldn't stand them, so I ripped them out. But, it's pretty cool that you get to just dabble in something and see what you like and what you don't like.
Yeah. What has been your biggest learning curve so far?
To really to back myself with pricing, maybe. When I first started selling, the first florist that I started selling to, she did a couple of orders, and I went to her for pricing as a guide. And I made this list of what she said that she paid for other things. I was like, okay, well, I've got nothing else to go by, because even if you see a price list from a wholesaler or whatever, you don't know how many stems are in a bunch, and it's really hard to work that out. And I had no experience in this industry. I think I haven't spoken about this bit yet, that this florist, after doing an order through me, she unfortunately had to cancel. And so I was like, oh gosh, I've harvested all these flowers, but I've only got one florist. And I'd sold some bunches just through social media here and there, but not much. But and this is when dahlias had just started blooming, so I didn't have enough to sell to the florist. But I harvested those dahlias, and I ended up making like 10 big bunches, and I just put it on my local Facebook group, just saying, you know, I'm just starting out in this business. I've got these flowers. Would anyone be interested? And I had 52 people want these 10 bunches of flowers.
Oh, wow.
And in like
good outcome.
15 minutes. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. So there is an opportunity to sell retail as well as wholesale. So from there, I sort of made that decision to do both retail and wholesale. And I had to back myself and what I wanted to sell my products for. And it was from that moment onwards, to be honest, that I didn't want someone else dictating what my prices were. I wanted to do my research on what the market is, but I'm not going to sell something cheaper than what it's worth, because that's what the price is elsewhere. Because I think people can sort of play games a bit, and I put a lot of work, you know, we all do. We put a lot of work into our product. And it's our product. It's something I do struggle with. Local growers in my area, that they just want to sell it, so they sell it really cheap. And people selling bunches of flowers for $5, and you're like, oh gosh, you put so much work into it. You've got to back yourself. You just can't do it to yourself.
Who's selling flowers for $5? Does that even happen anymore?
Surprisingly, there are a few. Yeah, no, that's interesting. But
this is where I sort of hark back to, and maybe it's something that I've been thinking more about as I've been going through doing these podcasts, is that you need this to be, and I've probably said it about 5 times already, like a business, you know. Yeah. It's got to be a viable business to be able to carry on and do this year after year and not burn out.
Yeah.
You need to be getting paid the right amount of money.
And you need boundaries as well. For yourself and for people buying from you. Like I think a couple of times I let some people come to the property and say what they wanted, and I harvested with them there, and I'm like, this is just not going to work. It's not worth my time because it takes so long to do it that way. And because I've got kids, I have to do it around them. And, you know, you should be harvesting in the morning or in the evening when it's cooler. I can't do it around other people. So yeah. I learned quickly to set those boundaries, and I'm firm with it, and it needs to work with my family. So I charged what I was worth in the travel industry, and I plan to continue that here.
Yeah. Flowers. Awesome. So what would be your biggest achievement?
Oh, probably my first Mother's Day just gone.
Yeah.
That was horrendous. it was fun. I just wish my toddler was sleeping that week. That would have been really handy. But since that order from a florist was cancelled, and I did those 10 bunches of flowers, so that was, I think, the 18th of January. I worked it out before I got on to you tonight. I've sold 412 retail bunches since the 18th of January. Oh, wow.
Congratulations.
Thanks. And that just, yeah, and like, I'm not a florist. They're farm bunches. They're not arrangements. I don't have a background, although any opportunity that I've got for a workshop with a florist, I jump, and they've been amazing, and I have learnt so much over the last few months. But yeah, I'm pretty proud of Mother's Day. Like, I'm just a one-man band. It's just me. It's me harvesting. It's me bunching up. It's me delivering them to customers, but also to a few locations around the Adelaide Hills. And I did 71 bunches over that weekend, and that's huge for me.
Yeah, it's huge.
So I was really proud of myself, and I'm really proud of what I've done since January.
It sounds like it's been incredible. Yeah. And what have you ever done anything sort of in this time that you've regretted immediately? Like, I don't know, put the wrong chemical on something, or put bugs in with something that wasn't meant to be. Do you know what I mean? That sort of thing. Yeah.
That is a good question. I have, rotting those ranunculus, that killed me because I spent a good bit of money on getting them. But other bits and pieces, like, I have a tendency to buy, you know, perennial plants, knowing full well I don't have time to plant them, and they sit there and I just watch them die. I need to not do that. I have wasted a lot of money with doing that, just thinking that I want to do that, and I guess I just want to do everything now, especially for things like proteas and eucalyptus and things like that I won't get anything from for a long time. I want to do it now, but I just have had to be more realistic on what I can achieve. But I recently did the best thing so far in my flower career, is I hired a mate's dad who hasn't been working, and he just has given me some help. He does 4 hours a week, and I just get him to do the things that I just can't do with kids, whether it's just, you know, planting things or shoveling mulch or like he just helped me with cutting my dahlias back and things like that. I guess it's just that unrealistic expectation of what I can achieve within my time. Yeah.
I also think it's investing in yourself and investing in the future, because if you don't do these small things, then how are you ever able to grow? You're sort of always on the back foot. So
it's that delay. It's right now, as much as it doesn't look like spring, this is when we have to grow and get the plants ready to be flowering in spring. It's not like it's the first day of spring and it goes, oh, okay, we'll just wake up and get started. It doesn't work like that. It continues. You've got to do all the hard work. That's something that I underestimated, was the amount of work around March, April. You've got everything flowering. Dahlias are at their peak. You're harvesting like crazy. I'm bunching up. I'm delivering. But then it's also when you're starting everything for the following season. I completely underestimated how much time that would take up.
Yeah. And are you growing from seed, or are you buying in plugs?
I have about 3 billion seeds. I'm a bit of an addict. I think Sam from Wild Violet Flower Farm has me on her little speed dial thing, because I've ordered so many seeds from her because she has such an amazing collection. So I've tried to do as much as I can through seed. I've even I'm giving it a go at doing some proteas and banksias and eucalyptus from seed.
Yeah, great.
But I had this little light bulb moment the other day, and that is, it's okay to buy plugs. It doesn't make you less of a farmer. So I've started getting some trays of plugs, and I will have a bit of both.
Okay, yeah. It's just interesting. I interviewed somebody else and they just said, you know, if you can grow from seed, and this was a commercial, like, you know, he's got a big commercial farm, said if you can grow from seed, it's great to do so, because plugs are costly at the end of the day. But whether, you know, maybe it's costs you more time to do seeds, it's one of those things, isn't it? Either one or the other.
If you don't have time to do it all, you're going to have less flowers later. That makes sense. So I think a happy medium of doing both. I'm doing the easy stuff by seed and the slightly more challenging by plugs.
But kind of getting onto the industry side of things, is there any groups up there that you can share buying these plugs with, or that you can sort of reach out to? And I know you said you've got a few girls in your area who you work with. Would you consider buying plugs with them? Would you consider hiring machinery with them at the same time, so that you can sort of, you know, half the costs?
Well, I have been sharing some plugs with one of the girls in my local area. But this probably doesn't make sense to do so, but we do it. My little group with the other girls that they're in, one's in Victoria and the other two are in New South Wales, we tend to do an order of plugs, because it costs $30 every time you get a delivery, which doesn't sound like much, but it adds up when you're getting things in different weeks. So we sort of share it around, and then we actually can just get the plugs out of the tray, and we put them in Snaploc bags, and we put them in a box and send them to each other. Because the problem is like when you're at this stage, you don't, you know, like I want to supply snapdragons, for instance, for florists, and I also want them for my retail, but I don't need to
have it come in trays. So what we do is we tend to buy a few different colors and then
we split them, and then we've got, maybe 80 plants in this color and 80 in this, and then we have more of a selection, because that's what I found with florists that wanted to buy direct from me. They wanted the selection, and that's why this season I'm growing so much more of a selection, because I think if I grew four times the amount of flowers over this last season, I still would have sold out.
Yeah, which is great to hear.
Yeah,
amazing. So do you think there's enough information when you come into the industry to be able to grow flowers on a commercial scale? Did you find it hard to find that information out there?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I think if a lovely girl didn't happen to introduce me into this Facebook group, I don't think I would be doing this today, to be honest. That's been a wealth of knowledge. Like, I bought all the books, you know, all the go-to books that everyone buys. I've got them, but well, for lack of better words, I'm breastfeeding, so I can't usually sit there reading a book while doing that, while trying to put a child to sleep. I'm usually in the dark on my phone.
Yeah,
so course. I did a lot of reading online, but then I just found the Facebook groups to be so helpful. But definitely the bit that I've struggled with the most is just being able to get the pricing right. And even when I did find, as I said before, when I did find out what the price for a bunch of snapdragons, then I'm just like, well, how many is in a bunch? Yeah. Because I had one florist tell me that she pays $4.50 for a bunch of billy buttons. And I'm like, okay, so that's, is that five? And she's like, no, that's 10. I'm like, what?
I think this is all depends on scale too, scale of your farm, of their farm, how much, you know, you're growing in comparison to somebody who can sell them for that price.
Yeah.
So this is where in my personal thing is that you have to make up your own pricing for what you need to be able to continue building your farm and to continue supporting your family and continue to make money, because we need farmers like you around in a few years' time. We don't want everyone to start and then suddenly fall off because they're not getting enough money for the product.
Yeah, and that's where Emma from Blue Gum Valley, she's really good at calculating what's worth growing, what's not worth growing, and that's been really good. But I've been really lucky just recently, maybe about 6 weeks, 8 weeks ago, a big flower farm in the Adelaide Hills has really taken me under their wing. And I remember contacting them, just, you know, one of the girls said, you know, oh, you should contact these guys. And I was like, oh, yeah. So I just touched base. I didn't realise that they were a massive farm. I thought they were like a little local farm like the rest of us are. I was like, oh, can I come out and see your place sometime? She's like, yeah, sure, we'd love to have you. So I'll pop out there and, oh, my God, it is just, I can't even think of how many acres it is, but it was huge. But it's all outdoors. It's not in greenhouses and polytunnels. Yeah. And oh my gosh, they have just been so amazing to me. So, so helpful. And I'm just, they're just so good to me. I'm just so grateful for that. And they've helped me a bit with pricing and, I guess being in a similar area to where I am, what grows well, what's worth the money, what's worth the hassle. And
it's amazing to have that sort of knowledge base and for people to be sharing it with you. I think that we shouldn't be scared, you know, smaller growers shouldn't be scared to approach you know, let's, for lack of a better word, like bigger or growers.
I call them the real growers.
Yeah, but I don't think there's even that, you know. I really think that so many of them are willing to share what they've learned, and they just want to see more flowers within the industry and for this industry to grow stronger. So,
because they've been around a long time and they were burnt they were burnt in the same fire as we were. No. So I don't know, maybe that's why they've been so great to me. But do you know what, without sounding like I'm sucking up to you, but it wasn't probably until I started listening to this podcast that I guess built up enough confidence, and I guess just even just getting the thought of contacting some of these local farms to network and
yeah,
and see how things work. So thank you.
No, that's totally fine. So what do you love about the Australian flower industry?
I guess just, yeah, a bit of that, of how we do all work together and how people are, well, most people are approachable and want to see how each other succeeds. And there's a lot of information sharing. There's, yeah, a lot of inspiration within our own country.
But
it's been like, you know, there's just there's the odd times where people aren't as welcoming, but majority, like 95% of people have been really welcoming and encouraging.
Yeah.
Because it's a pretty daunting thing to get into, because it is quite a big upfront expense to get going. So I can see why a lot of people don't do it. If you can have that support, that just makes a world of difference.
Yeah. By upfront expense, can I get you to expand on that? Are you okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. What did you have to buy to start off with?
Well, definitely all the compost. That was that was a huge expense. Just the amount that I needed to be able to get started, and then the fertilizers and the soil improvers. But then once I started taking things up a notch, I've invested in things like a lot of heat mats, grow lights. I've got that set up inside my studio now. And then, gosh, I can't think of anything now. The seeds, I guess, the plants.
Are you irrigating and things like that?
Yeah, yeah. Sorry. Mm. The number one expense would be irrigation.
Yeah.
Our irrigation for the whole garden was burnt in the fire. So we were lucky to get a bit of help from insurance with that. And I have an amazing system that's automated. So I don't have to remember to do anything, which when you're pregnant, you probably know, you sort of lose half your brain. You can't remember to do these things. So that's been
oh, you fantastic. Don't even have to be pregnant. I didn't even water my garden at all.
People didn't tell me that the baby brain continues after you have the baby.
It's the sleep deprivation. It's the thing.
Yeah. I feel like I haven't had a brain for about 3.5 years now. So
you might get it back when they're like 20 or 30 or something.
That'd be great. Yeah. Not 19, 29 years ago. But that's all right. But yeah, the expenses on that side of things. But then, you know, like at some point, I really need to get some sort of little tractor. Getting by at the moment, and I'm lucky that I have local farmers around me that are willing to help. So I'm excited. I'm going out into my paddock. My husband and I have a paddock each. It's ridiculous. So I call it my paddock. And I've got someone that's helping me just skim the top layer of dirt because it's very compacted. I'm going out into my paddock this season. I'm so excited. So it's not just my big front yard. I look like a real farm.
Yeah, how fabulous.
Yes.
Yeah, how exciting. So I was going to ask you if you have to leave your farm quickly, which I feel like is a horrible question to ask you because you've had to leave quickly before, but let's just say farm-wise, what would you take with you?
Well, I guess just like a little disclaimer first is the one thing that I did learn from the fire is pretty much everything is replaceable. So
yeah,
I had a bit of think about this question because I was like, oh gosh, what would I take? Because I did just sort of up and go. This sounds stupid, but probably my number one thing would be my phone, because breastfeeding, everything is on my phone. My whole business is on my phone. And I guess just every note that I've ever taken on how a plant has gone, each dahlia that I've planted, I've got notes on how they went. I've got a photo of each one. So it's got everything on there. So that's a dahlia called Vera's Elmer that I actually got from, I got that from Marty from Quite Contrary.
Yeah.
And every time that flowered, I was just in awe. It is
such an underrated. What does it look
like? Oh, it's pink. It's light pink, but it's big. It's like the size of like a Formby Duke. But
okay.
It's light pink with like a white sort of center, and as it opens up, it gets pinker and pinker. But it is just every time. I hated harvesting it as much as you need to, but I hated selling it. If I did harvest it, I just kept it myself because I just had the one plant, and it was, every time it flowered, it was beautiful. And then my third thing was one of the plants that was donated to us after the fire was this beautiful rose that I have no idea what it is. So that I can't replace because I don't know what it is.
Yeah.
It was just labeled heirloom rose, and it's so pretty. It's like a candy cane. It's like nothing that I'd, be the first thing that came to mind to put in a bouquet of flowers, but it was just so unique and so special. So I'd have to dig that up and take that with me.
Yeah, the sentiment behind it too is kind of lovely.
It's just that reminder, and just from the reminder of how kind people were when the fire happened. Mm.
Yeah. So what is your favorite tool?
Favorite tool? Well, I guess every day I use my gorilla cart, and I'm starting to think that your podcast needs to be sponsored by them because everyone's
yes, gorilla cart. If you're listening,
go on. But yeah, between the gorilla cart,
I'll hashtag them.
Yeah, you'll need to. But also, just I've got this little trailer that my parents-in-law gave us to put on our ride-on mower. So between those two things. Yeah, I don't think I can do without them.
Is there anything I haven't touched base on that you wanted to share about your journey and your farm? And I apologize if you can hear a sort of a scratching noise. My dog has a giant collar on her head, and she's just been to the vets yesterday, and she keeps on trying to get onto me.
Oh, as in her, she's got one of those.
Yeah, those big cones, you know.
Do you know like what's crazy? So does my dog at the moment. That's so weird. Yeah,
she's just so dumb with it on. She doesn't understand what is happening.
My golden retriever can still get through the dog door with it, but it sounds like the house is falling down every time it comes through. What type of dog have you got?
A Kelpie collie.
Ah, yes.
Yeah.
We just got a new puppy who I'm hoping to train to help with the bird situation on our property.
Yeah, great.
So we got a Maremma.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so, yeah, because the birds, they're one of our biggest pests, so.
Yeah, I haven't actually asked you that. What is your biggest pest?
Birds. Between birds, they, do you know what, they'd be number two, I reckon. Number one would be thrips.
Okay.
They're just horrible.
Yeah,
just,
and how do you battle those? What do you do?
That was something interesting because I'm not organic. But, I try to do things as organically as I can, but I'm not organic. But because I was pregnant, I couldn't use sprays. And then after having the baby, I was very just sensitive about using sprays because I was breastfeeding. So that was something interesting, watching nature take its course a little bit. But the one thing that nature has not taken care of are thrips.
Yeah. Okay.
And that kills me.
Yeah.
So I have no idea what I'm going to do about them, to be completely honest, because they just, anything white, they ruin, and then anything with a color, they turn white. So I can't win. Yeah. So I'm open to advice if anyone wants to let me know
how to do that. I think somebody definitely will know
I tried the bugs. I tried the fight bugs with bugs. It didn't work for me. I don't know if I didn't do it properly.
Have you sprayed with an oil?
I haven't done anything like that, to be honest. So this year needs to be a bit more of a trial with that. But
And is there anything now that I haven't asked you that you wanted to share about your journey that I haven't touched base on?
It's so much work, but it is so rewarding. If there's anyone that's like dabbling in it, like I did, just keep going. Give yourself at least a full 12 months of it. You can't really judge your success on just a small part of the season, if that makes sense. You just got to keep going, and you know, every now and then it feels like I'm just going to throw in the towel and just go get a 9-to-5 job. But I love what I'm doing, and I'm passionate about the growing and the creative side, and I got to keep going.
Yeah,
I'll get there.
Thank you so much, Jane, for sharing your story about being a mum and starting a flower farm. It is truly inspiring, and I hope that somebody else out there gets just as much from this episode as I did. It's really hard work, and you are doing it, and I can't wait to see where you are in a few years' time. If you would like to get in touch with Jane, you can do so via Instagram at bigskyflowerfarm.sa. And also, if you look on there, you can find her email address also. So thank you so much to everyone who has been listening in. Again, if you want to leave a review, you can do so at Apple Podcasts, or you can write me an email at dishthedirtpodcast@gmail.com. Until next week, I hope everyone's staying healthy out there if you are in a cold place in Australia, because man, those flus are horrible at the moment. Anyway, I hope everyone is staying safe, and keep being blooming fabulous.